Hello everyone, and welcome to our next episode. Today our guest is Dr. Nathan Hedson. He's an assistant professor of urban planning at the University of North Texas. His research focuses on freight infrastructure coordination and its role in economic development. He has 15 years of freight planning research and consulting experience. Dr. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us today. And today our topic is Middle Corridor, and it is influence, benefits, and challenges for the Ukraine. It's a great pleasure to having you today, and I would like to take this opportunity to ask the first question. So, Nathan, since we have an audience from different backgrounds, from general backgrounds to academics, students, could you please explain us what is Middle Corridor, and what is the background of this Middle Corridor, and how can we understand it?
Thank you very much, Aga and Tom. So I think when we start talking about the Middle Corridor, we first have to put it in the context of the Belt and Road Initiative. And the Belt and Road Initiative is a large program by China to integrate the economies of China with Central Asia and with other sort of partners that they hadn't worked with extensively in the past. And the way that they're doing this is through both maritime and overland coordination. Before it was called the Belt and Road Initiative, it was again called One Belt, One Road. And the belt was the Silk Road economic belt that ran across Central Asia. So when we talk about the Middle Corridor, this is the route that would run from China through Central Asia, across the Caspian Sea, across the Caucasus, and then via the Black Sea to Ukraine, to Romania, to other ports, and they would eventually terminate in Central Europe. This is contrasted with the Northern Corridor, which is the route that runs through Kazakhstan, Russian Federation, Belarus, Poland, and then on to the rest of Europe. So initially, this option, the Middle Corridor, was seen as much more logistically complicated because of the fact that it had to run through so many different countries. And it created, for that reason, a lot of logistical complications. But the Northern Corridor, which ran through Russia and Belarus, even though on paper it looks like it's more simple, now, as we know, it's more logistically complicated because of the sanctions against Russia. So this is the reason why the Middle Corridor is really emerging as a major topic of conversation, because it basically enables a lot of these countries that are in Central Asia to coordinate more consistently with each other.
All right. Thank you very much. I wanted to have a follow-up question on that, because you mentioned that the coordination on the land route is more difficult than on the sea route. Could you maybe quickly explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so basically, one of the major problems when we talk about overland routes is that you have customs clearance issues whenever you're crossing a border. You also have the potential for rent exaction by countries if they are, for example, holding up cargo artificially. And so whenever you have overland transportation, you have to have a certain level of trust and a good sort of working relationship between countries for that cargo to go efficiently. Because if you have even one country along the route that is not willing to basically collaborate or coordinate, then that whole chain can break down. So when you have a route that is involving multiple stakeholders in multiple countries, that sort of coordination is key. So that's why when you talk about logistics folks that look at these different routing options, they tend to prioritize the routes that are geographically more simple. And so that would, for example, be the Northern Corridor, which would run through Russia and Belarus. But as we know, that has become not so simple since the invasion of Ukraine. And so for this reason, even with the logistical complications associated with the Middle Corridor, a lot of logistics folks are still advocating for its use, both because it has become comparatively simpler, and also because it potentially helps several of those countries with their internal development challenges, both making them more integrated with each other and also helping them to create more advanced supply chains.
Good. Thank you a lot, Nathan, for this. And speaking on Ukraine, I'm wondering, so today our case is also on Ukraine, its influence on Ukraine. So follow-up question is, how is it essential for Ukraine, this Middle Corridor? What's the importance of this Middle Corridor for Ukraine?
So Ukraine's economy, even with the earlier 2014 invasion had remained in some ways tied to Russia's. And so right now, of course, Ukraine is trying to decouple its economy in all ways from the Russian economy. And so it's trying to establish linkages with new trading partners, including those in the Caucasus, including those in Central Asia, and do a more robust business with those countries. And a lot of the countries in Central Asia, for example, could provide a lot of the key construction materials or inputs for construction that Ukraine will need in mass amounts in the coming years. So that's one direct way in which Ukraine could benefit from the Middle Corridor, is both having new markets for its exports in the Caucasus and Central Asia and to China as well, and also receiving imports of raw materials from Central Asia that will be essential for reconstruction. In addition, if we're thinking about routes to access Europe, we need many ports on the Black Sea that could potentially handle these flows from Central Asia or from China. So Ukraine has ports, some of which are still occupied, like the Port of Mariupol, others which are now, which have remained free, like Odessa, and others which were liberated, like Kherson. Those are all entry points that you could send cargo via the territory of Ukraine to Europe. So Ukraine, in a sense, becomes a much stronger player in the Middle Corridor than it would have been in the past. And also, it becomes no longer bypassed by the overall BRI planning, because initially China had wanted to incorporate Ukraine in a more meaningful way into the BRI. But after the 2014 Russian invasion, when it was clear that routes couldn't run through both Russia and Ukraine, that's when China sort of defaulted to this route that would handle both Russia and Belarus as opposed to Ukraine. So Ukraine is in a very strong position right now to handle more freight for that reason. And that helps both the integration of Europe and Asia, and also it helps Ukraine's own internal development.
So basically, we can also say here that a middle corridor provides here advantage Ukraine to reach the Asian market, so the China mainly here, or and the other countries, plus being part of the One Belt, One Road from a different direction, and still facilitating this kind of competition between middle corridor and north corridor, as you said, kind of sidelining that one and more focusing, making a gate to Europe via its border.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say it's about sidelining it as much. It's more about diversification of options. Yeah. And it's really about the types of cargo that will be handled. And of course, these corridors really only make sense for certain types of routes and certain types of cargo. And so if you're dealing with bulk, not non-time sensitive cargoes, then you probably don't need a lot of these overland routes, because on average, they're probably going to be more costly unless you're in a landlocked position. So obviously, if you're talking about exports from Uzbekistan, if you're talking about exports from Kazakhstan, then that is the primary means by which you would want to export. But if you're talking about export of low-value goods from China or to China when you're near coastal China, then you probably aren't going to be defaulting to these options, because they are going to be probably more costly on a ton-mile basis. And so it's really about understanding where those growth opportunities are. And I think we shouldn't just be talking about it in terms of a route for Chinese cargo or a route for East Asian cargo to go through Central Asia. Uh-huh. We should talk about the role in helping Central Asia to develop internally and develop its own transport linkages, which had, for past dependent reasons, been tied to Russia in the past. And so this allows this Trans-Caspian route to develop, and it allows the integration of those countries in Central Asia with those in the Caspian region. And it also allows for now a Black Sea-Caspian Sea coordination to occur in a more meaningful way.
Yeah, very interesting perspective on highlighting the role of Caspian Sea region as well. Go ahead, Tom. I think you have the follow-up question.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, I was wondering, right, because China came up with the One Belt, One Road initiative quite a while ago. So, and the Ukraine crisis, of course, has had its influence on the Middle Corridor. So what would you say that the influence of the renewed Russian invasion in Ukraine has been on the Middle Corridor? And do you think that it's a positive development for example, China or...
Or Caspian Sea. So yeah. In terms of like basically how the current invasion influenced and create a challenge and danger for the development of the Middle Corridor? What do you think on that?
Well, I think that the invasion has created both opportunities and risks, because obviously entities like the World Bank were looking very strongly at the Middle Corridor even prior to the full-scale invasion. So you have various development entities that were looking at it, but it really sped up the timeline, I would say, for development. So whereas this was looked at in the past as, okay, well, this is another alternative. This is another alternative that we could look at. Then it was really thrust to the forefront by the invasion. So for this reason, a lot of countries along the corridor are thinking, okay, this is maybe our moment where we can really start to attract the level of capital investment from development entities to modernize port infrastructure on both sides, to modernize rail infrastructure and logistics infrastructure, and technology and digitalization of the corridor so that you're using effective tracking mechanisms for cargo, because all of these are necessary if you're going to have trust and you're also going to have efficiency built into the system. And so the Ukraine crisis, I think, has supercharged in a lot of ways the Middle Corridor development. But it's also led to debates about what is its long-term niche going to be, because if all of these investments are based on the assumption that this only makes sense so long as the Northern Corridor is basically in a precarious state because the sanctions against Russia, and then in a few years, the situation in Russia, if the war ends and there's some degree of normalization of relations with Russia, with the rest of the world, we don't want to have a situation in which all that cargo then goes back to the Northern Corridor. So you have to think about the cargo opportunities that are going to make sense regardless of what is happening in the Northern Corridor. And so this is going to be the tricky thing. So you have to think about really those cargoes that would be where the Middle Corridor would be the default option, even if the Northern Corridor exists. Not to say that you can't get some of the discretionary cargo from the Northern Corridor, but you can't put all of your eggs in that particular basket. So this is why I think we should really think about, okay, what can Uzbekistan, for example, export to Europe? What can Kazakhstan export to Europe and the other Central Asian states as well? Or how can they add value to supply chains that may originate in China but would interact in a meaningful way with the economies of Central Asia en route to Europe? Because if you're building off of those options, then you have a much more robust routing option. And then this also could help economies like Georgia, Armenia, to become more diversified in their economies, less dependent on Russia and less dependent on other regional players, and be able to have a more robust and efficient maritime and rail system.
All right. Yeah. And I think that's a very good point, that if you look purely from the standpoint of the crisis of in Ukraine, that the Middle Corridor might actually be more of a short-term solution, right, to circumvent Russia, to still engage in trade with China. I think that's a very, very good point. Thank you for that. Aga, you have a follow-up question?
Since you mentioned NATO, European Union, and beginning, because that's very also in your answer that the end point is European Union, do you think EU can play also a role in terms of ensuring the sustainability of the Middle Corridor as well, or somehow avoid and facilitate actually the cooperation and avoid future risks? What do you think on that?
Well, the EU, for example, is the organization Transeca, which is the Transport Corridor Europe, Caucasus, Asia. And so this is an organization that's existed since the early 1990s and has, worked on coordination that would not only include the Middle Corridor, but would include the Middle Corridor as well. So organizations like this with the EU about standardization for transport and also capital investment, that could be one way in which the EU could get more involved. But I think it's basically a coordinated effort between EU, World Bank, other development entities, and the countries themselves in terms of identifying what types of investment needs they would most need to make the corridor work, having agreement in terms of, is this a corridor that's for handling all types of cargo, or is it going to be really targeted towards intermodal cargo? Because that's another sort of, I think, miscommunication that sometimes occurs, is that sometimes when I hear this discussion, it's only about containerized cargo. Mm-hmm. But in Central Asia, containers are not really a major component thus far of their overall transport portfolio. So it might be different cargo types, but those types of agreements have to be made in terms of how are you going to structure the corridor? Because the nature of the capital investments that you make in freight infrastructure is really tied to the cargo types that you're intending to handle. And basically, if different parties are investing, they need to know what the corridor is actually for and what it's not for. And so I think that's where I think the EU probably could also help to identify what their long-term needs and what they would be willing to invest in to make happen.
Great. Thank you so much, Nathan, for these comprehensive and very good answers. So this was actually the final part of our discussion today. Today, our topic was a middle corridor and it is role in the Central Asia and influence to the Ukraine, basically prospects. And our guest was the Dr. Nathan Hudson. Thank you very much, Nathan, again, for joining us and for sharing your knowledge. Dear all, thanks also for listening and follow us, please, Twitter, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey.